ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते
From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 31, entitled The Movements of the Living Entities, Text Number 40. Yupayati Shanay Maya
Yupayati Shanay Maya
Yoshiteva Vinirmita
Yoshiteva Vinirmita
Tamikshetatmanomrityum Trinaikupam ivavritam Yupayati shanamaya Yoshiteva vinirmita Tamikshetatmanomrityum Trinaikupam ivavritam Repeat word for word translation. Ya.
Ya.
Shihu.
Shihu.
Upayati.
Upayati.
Approaches.
Approaches.
Shanai.
Shanai.
Slowly.
Slowly.
Maya.
Maya.
Representation of Maya.
Representation of Maya.
Yosit.
Yosit.
Woman.
Woman.
Deva.
Deva.
By the Lord.
By the Lord.
Vinirmita.
Vinirmita.
Created.
Created.
Tam,
Tam,
her,
her.
Ikshetam,
Ikshetam,
one must regard,
one must regard.
Atmanaha,
Atmanaha,
of the soul,
of the soul.
Mrityum,
Mrityum,
death,
death.
Trinai,
Trinai,
with grass,
with grass.
Kupam,
Kupam,
a well,
a well. Iva,
like,
like.
Avritam,
Avritam,
covered,
covered.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The woman created by the Lord is a representation of Maya, and one who associates with such Maya by accepting services must certainly know that this is the way of death, just like a blind well covered with grass. Translation responsibly. The woman created by the Lord
is the representation of Maya,
and one who associates with such Maya
By accepting services,
must certainly know that this is the way of death.
Must certainly know this is the way of death.
Just like a blind well covered with grass.
Just like a blind well covered with grass.
Purport. Sometimes it happens that a rejected well is covered by grass, and an unwary traveler who does not know of the existence of the well falls down, and his death is assured. Similarly, association with a woman begins when one accepts service from her, because woman is especially created by the Lord to give service to man. By accepting her service, a man is entrapped. If he is not intelligent enough to know that she is the gateway to a hellish life, he may indulge in her association very liberally. This is restricted for those who aspire to ascend to the transcendental platform. Even 50 years ago in Hindu society, such association was restricted. A wife could not see her husband during the daytime. Householders even had different residential quarters. The internal quarters of a residential house were for the woman, and the external quarters were for the man. Acceptance of service rendered by a woman may appear very pleasing. Well, one should be very cautious in accepting such service, because it is clearly said that woman is the gateway to death, or forgetfulness of oneself. She blocks the path of spiritual realization. Om Ajnanati Milandasya Ajnanatana Shalakaya Chakshur Mutam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swaroopa Prakatam Yantadati Mukam karoti vachalam pangam nangaite girinya kripata maham vande shi gurundinatavinam Vanchakalpatrivascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanam pavne vya vaishnavya namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So the woman created by the Lord is a representation of Maya, and one who associates with such Maya by accepting services must certainly know that this is the way of death, just like a blind well covered with grass. Okay, any comments or questions? It's a pretty, very loaded section. Excuse me?
It's not applicable for devotees.
Okay, let's talk. Alright, so this chapter is called The Movements of the Living Entities, and earlier on we are being told by Kapiladev about the different ways Maya, the external energy of the Lord, influences a living entity. We see this when the Lord is describing the situation of the child in the womb. So it explains the hellish and the troublesome position of the child inside the mother's womb. Now generally sometimes, or most times I find, the whole process is very much romanticized. You know, pregnancy and the child, everything. But if you look deep into what's actually going on inside, it is a very pitiful condition. No air, no light, so many gases surrounding you. No space to move around. So it is very, very difficult. And Bhagavatam really blesses us by giving us this knowledge and understanding of what the reality is. No, it's not just the child comes out and yay, hurrah, but what's going on inside in that 9-month period. Like different worms inside biting, the skin is so sensitive. Bhagavatam also mentions that the child inside the womb goes in and out of consciousness because of the constraint. It is so hellish that the child goes in and out of consciousness while inside the womb, just because of the difficult position, the difficult situation. So Kapiladev is addressing that right through to text 32-33, explaining just how much suffering is happening. And although only the very fortunate living entity, it's explained that the fortunate living entity in the womb will pray to the Lord that they may remember the Lord once they are out of that situation, that they promise to take shelter and to reestablish themselves as the servants of the Lord in their constitutional position. But by the force of Maya, of course, that recollection is not there. After childbirth, so many intricate situations entrap us. The child comes out and they're the center of the universe. Everyone is serving them. They get what they want, etc. So by Krishna's Maya, once again, we're put into a state of forgetfulness. And we go along with the plan, pushed by the three ropes of material nature. We are bound to materialistic activities without knowledge of who we are, without knowledge of Krishna, without knowledge of where our happiness lies and what our identity is. So in that sense, the Lord's Maya is very powerful, because although we come from a very deplorable situation from the womb, we still want to come out and then enjoy, because we have forgotten what that was like. Now this section, the Lord is explaining his form of Maya. The Lord is explaining another aspect of how powerful his Maya is. Well, the Lord is claiming it is his Maya, Mama Maya Duratriya, this energy that is Krishna's energy. So just because it's bewildering, it pushes us to be in forgetfulness, it covers us over, it doesn't mean that it doesn't belong to Krishna. It is Krishna's energy. So Krishna's Maya is very, very powerful when represented in the form of a woman, and for a woman in the form of a man. And why is that so? Oftentimes we hear that this world is really maintained based on the sex principle, based on the attraction between man and woman. So many things are going on. And Prabhupada explains in the later text, I won't get into detail, that the main attachment that the fair sex will have is, you know, to the husband, to the children, to the home, and everything that comes with it, the intricacies. And for a husband, for a man, is to the comfort, the service of the wife, the beauty, etc. So all of these attachments entrap one into this material world. So with these entrapments, one becomes forgetful. And in that way, that is our maya. We take all these temporary situations to be factual and to be very, very dear to us. So we hold on to them very, very tightly. And when these are taken away in the form of time, or in the form of old age, in the form of death, there's great suffering that happens at the same time. So the Lord Kapila Dev in this section is giving us the reality. And the reality is, yes, the form, the energy of the Lord in the form of the external energy, Maya, in the embodiment of a woman is very, very powerful and very, very bewildering. That many things that we see around in the world just to maintain this relationship, one has to work, one has to get a house, one has to put the children through education, one has to have an establishment, so you have an entire mechanism dedicated to generating wealth or creating money so that we can have a good, comfortable situation. In that way, when the Bhagavatam says this whole world is running because of the attraction between man and woman, and to maintain that, so many things are needed. Jobs are needed. So many things are needed. So it is very, very troublesome. It is a sacrifice. But depending on where our attachments lie in this relationship, the sacrifice will either liberate us or it will bind us, it will chain us to material existence. And Prabhupada elaborates further. And we'll talk about that as we go along. So we might take this verse sometimes. Those who read the verse might think, oh, a woman is the gateway to death. It sounds very, very harsh. You know, women speak up, let's put our fists up and say, down with the man, you know, what's going on, like anti-woman, anti-family. I'm not here to do that today. I'm just here to really try to understand what the Bhagavatam is saying and just be really honest. And we can all just be honest and understand what we're being given here, to understand what it means to have a female material body and a male material body. There are certain conditions that come with it. It's kind of like a fixed packet or a fixed deal. Having a material body means you will be subject to the three modes of material nature. Having a material body means you will be afflicted by Adi Atmika, Adi Devika, Adi Bhautika. These things will be there because that's what it means to be in the material world. These miseries will be inflicted upon us. But it depends on how we handle this association with this energy. What do we do to extricate ourselves or to transcend ourselves? We take to the process, a pure process of Krishna consciousness, and we try to transcend the effects of the modes of material nature and material suffering. So it is not just the one-sided affair. In text 42, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that yes, woman is the cause of downfall for man, and man is the cause of downfall for woman. That potency, that covering and forgetfulness potency is infused in the material body. That is the Maya, to take the body to be something that which is not, something that is permanent, something that will always give us pleasure and joy and happiness. Now, show of hands, whose body has ever given them a sense of joy, happiness, pleasure that is unending? It's very difficult to say. The body really does not do that. The material world actually does not do that. It's like a correctional facility where we're supposed to learn, there's a fault in this machine. And the fault is, it will go through these six bodily changes. Satvikars, these changes that are applicable to material bodies. We're all born, we stay for some time, we grow, we produce some byproducts, we slowly start vanishing off, and then we dwindle. That is the end of the material body. We're all going to go through those changes. And we have defects. Our senses are very defective. We are illusioned very quickly. We have a propensity to cheat. That is there. We cheat ourselves in trying to understand who we are and what the goal of life is. That is the biggest cheating propensity that we have. So this Bhagavatam is giving this to light. And one of the principles of studying Bhakti Shastri, there's one principle of Shastra Chakshush, which means we're trying to see through the eyes of the Bhagavatam. So by hearing, we'll actually see what reality is. So we're hearing these subject matters, or there's restriction on mingling with the opposite sex, there's restriction on eating, so many restrictions. Oh, this is boring and painful. Why are restrictions there? Now, we follow restrictions every day. Even out in the material world, we drive a certain way. We all top up our maiki. You know, we're not above, you know, the laws of maiki. You know, if you don't have a maiki card, don't think just because you're a devotee, you're not going to get a ticket. Realization. I've had 3 tickets. So always top up your maiki. There are rules to follow even in this material world. We are constrained. We do things a certain way. We don't evade our tax situation. We pay our mortgage on time. We pay our bills. There are certain things that are put in there to protect us. And when we read through the pages of the Bhagavatam, we understand that rules and regulations and suggestions about how to relate with other material bodies are there to give us some security and protection. But we live in a society where sometimes it is very, very difficult to explain to people this propensity of fire and butter. Right? Prabhupada nicely explains it in the 7th canto, where he explains how a woman is compared to fire and man is like butter. Very, very difficult sometimes to behave normally, especially in the infernal years when the hormones are raging. From 13 up till somewhere in your 20s, it's like a blasting inferno. Everything is just so many things go on there. Unrestricted mingling, unrestricted everything, recreation. But what is being suggested here is to understand and how to utilize this combination of fire and butter properly. There is a right way to mix these two things, and there's a not so right way to dealing with this combination. For example, in the times we're living in now, there's a huge uproar on feminism and all these things, and up with the women, do whatever you want with your body, your choice, etc. And if you do not walk in that line as someone in a female body, you get criticized like anything. Oh, you're not a feminist, what's wrong with you? You know, we want equality, etc., etc. But in the name of equality in this world we're living in, we have industries that are dedicated to objectifying women in the form of fashion. And that is the equality that we want, to show off your body in ways that really should be private. That's not the equality that I'm trying to align myself with, quite frankly. The equality that we speak of course, on the spiritual platform, we're all equal. We're a spiritual energy, and we have equal opportunity to make advancement in spiritual life. Although we do have some social or some physical differences that are there, we can never be on an equal platform physically. Although there's a huge propaganda for that, but physically we're not equal. There are certain things that a female body can do and a male body cannot do. So all these modern ways of trying to be equal are not really substantiated by high philosophy, because it is not possible to be, at least on the physical and the mental platform, it's not possible to be equal. On a spiritual platform, yes, we are equal. So when Srila Prabhupada explains, well, at least Kapila Dev in this session is explaining the Lord's potency, His Maya Shakti in the form of a woman. Just how powerful, just how easily aggravated, how easily disempowered the opposite gender can be when this fire and the butter combination is not understood. It's very, very simple science. We can go into the kitchen. The cooks would know this. Inflame the ghee or the butter. The butter will melt so quickly. And sometimes, you know, as Prabhupada would mention, so many empires have risen and fallen based on not understanding this combination of fire and butter. And in society, there's a great... there's a lot to be gained from understanding this quality and encouraging understanding the psychology of why points like these have been made. It is very, very beneficial in society to have a brahmachari ashram. It is highly beneficial. Everyone benefits. The society benefits. The women benefit. Not everyone will always be in the brahmachari ashram. They will make fantastic partners in the grihastha ashram. The men will benefit when the ladies also are trained up nicely in a spiritual culture of how to control the senses, of how to develop finer qualities, feminine qualities. It doesn't mean that you don't get an education. It doesn't mean that you're a slave. It doesn't mean all these things that naturally come up in conversation when we're talking out there. It doesn't mean you cease to exist as a living entity in a female body. It just means you try to develop to your highest caliber possible. So when we hear developing qualities of being a servant, which is what our life is as a devotee anyway. We're all servants. But sometimes when we read that, like here it is mentioned, that woman was created to serve man. For some people it's like, it's uncomfortable. I was created to serve man. Even as a practicing devotee, sometimes I hear, I went through that phase. I'll be honest. But to understand, I'm a servant at the end of the day. Serve Krishna's devotees. You serve Krishna through his devotees. What's the big deal, really? It's a misunderstanding of these finer aspects, what Srimad Bhagavatam is talking about. So everyone benefits when... there is training, when there's understanding of the male-female psychology, and indulging in unnecessary association with the opposite sex just inflames our attachment to material existence. It inflames it. The issue is already there. Why inflame it? Just like, for example, Why dress provocatively and have a problem when people, you know, stare at you too much or bother you? I'm not condoning anything that ever happens on the street, but I'm just saying, in society, these things could be easily dealt with if there's an understanding of containing the senses and the sense objects in behavior, in culture. So we don't want to inflame the situation. We don't want to aggravate the situation. In text 38, Srila Prabhupada was mentioning how in a vanashram society, there's only three classes really that can have intimate association with women, and that is in the grihastha ashram, and everywhere else, very, very strict association. And that is to protect those that are on the path as well, not only protect the men, but also protect the ladies to keep their chastity. And when a society when a society embraces and respects the differences, there will be harmony. The differences in the nature should also be respected. Not that one side is always being criticized and the other is always being praised. The facts should be known and they should be respected. And by the process of Krishna consciousness, we can transcend these bodily designations and these bodily agitations. Prabhupada mentioned that a man should not be attached to a woman, nor should a woman be attached to the man. Both should be attached to the service of the Lord. So in relationship, there's the man, there's the woman, there's Krishna. Krishna is part of the relationship. Because once Krishna is not part of the relationship, then who are you serving? You're serving each other's senses, you're serving each other's attachments. And we have unlimited desires, desires really to try to enjoy. If we don't have Krishna in the center, it is very, very difficult to stay focused. It is very, very difficult to try to liberate oneself. For there's so many diversions in life. I don't know if you've noticed. There are many diversions out there. We're living in a techno world? Technology is so advanced. So many distractions. Even when you're sitting, even when you're swimming, when you're sleeping, someone is trying to call you, a message comes, a notification comes, and you're sleeping. You're not bothered by it. So many distractions. So what we should try to understand is that, yes, there are many entanglements provided by the external energy of Maya. And everyone should understand the Lord's material energy. Everyone should understand it. Prabhupada mentions, I think text 8, earlier on in this chapter, that everyone should understand the Lord's material energy in the shape of a woman. So it's not saying the men should understand or the woman only should understand. Everyone should understand and take responsibility for how they present themselves. Because if we're living in a society where we're trying to uplift each other, then we should be respectful enough to make Krishna consciousness easy. You know, one of the slogans in one of the centers, Bhakti Lounge, is that we make it easy for people to come to Bhakti, we make it easy for people to practice Bhakti, and we make it easy for to give Bhakti to others. So we should all understand the Lord's material energy in the shape of a woman, what it can do. It has two powers, to distract and to cover. It's very distracting. Even for myself, sometimes, seeing certain forms that are not, that do not respectfully present themselves is very disturbing to my mind, even if it's the same gender. It disturbs me. And it is very, very, as For the opposite sex, of course, it is distracting. So, in Vedic texts like Bhagavatam, woman is referred to as stream, expansive. After finding a proper mate, you know, generally things expand, your bank account, your home, wardrobe, whatever, things expand. So the troublesome factor comes there, and there's so many necessities that come, as I've mentioned before. So we have to be aware of those things and not think that we're just going to be walking in a rose garden and it's going to be all tulips and sunflowers and easy. And yes, Jai, we have to keep that, you know, Pandita Samadarshana. We have to see that equality and that keep a steady focus, have that drishti, that one-pointed fixed determination in bhakti to advance. Not that we just succumb to the distractions and we just allow the covering potency to overcome us. Before we know it, we'll be just in the deep, dark world. No one will hear our cries. We won't be able to see or hear anything. So we have to have that knowledge, that understanding of what this material energy in the shape of a woman or a man can do. Vice versa. So life in this world is very, very temporary. It comes and goes very quickly. So we have to make lots of effort to focus on our Krishna consciousness. And I was reading Prabhupada Memories the other day, and Prabhupada shared a nice little story when he was traveling, just to show how life used to be. I was contrasting it to now. Srila Prabhupada was speaking. He was in a train, and there was a young girl who had just... She was married, obviously. But as Prabhupada mentions, back then when young girls were married at a young age, it's not that they lived with the husband. Only when they came of age, then they would go. Initially, they'd just be at home being trained up, learning practical skills. So this girl was in a train going to the city with gifts to take to the boy's family and to see him. And in the train, there were some other city girls who were laughing at her because she was dressed very modestly. And they were poking her, making fun of her. And she was very, very tolerant, very patient, very quiet. And many people on the train, of course, took notice of this, and they didn't like what they were doing to this young girl. And the city girls were poking her, making fun of her. Oh, look at her. Oh, she's dressed like this. Oh, what slavery. She's already married. Ha, ha, ha. It goes on and on. Then this girl she was wearing a veil. So this girl just unveiled herself and she slapped the city girl. And I was so happy. She slapped her. She slapped these city girls who were making fun of her, and everyone on the train carriage applauded. Like, yes, she's sitting quietly, she's a good girl, she's a chaste girl, she's a respectable girl, she's covered, and you're all making this nonsense, this drama, this noise, making fun of her, not understanding her cultured behavior. So Prabhupada shared this story and said, yes, there were times where even in our society, it was like this, that the ladies were dressing themselves very modestly, not only for their protection, but to protect others. And we see not so much of that these days. Whenever I go to work, I work in a childcare center, so I'm just always covered up. And the first time I went there, of course, I was wearing a long skirt, Birkenstocks. Everyone just said, okay, so you must be vegetarian, and you must be like a religious person. And I said, but why? Where's the stereotype? They said, oh, you're just all covered up like this. You look like a simple person. But in a way of, oh, poor you, we have to cover up all the time. Because they expose themselves in so many different ways. So that is still there, that mentality is still there, that when you're covered up, you're living a sad life. You're missing out on showing yourself to the world and parading yourself. And honestly, when I look at, because obviously I wasn't born a devotee, so I had another life where you wouldn't recognize me. And when I look at how I used to behave and the things I used to wear, and I look at now, I just do not see that as being respectful or dignified, quite honestly. And I oftentimes talk with people out there at work, etc., who tell me that, yes, you know, these poor ladies who are wearing burkinis, you know, the Muslim ladies, they cover themselves even when they go swimming, which I have no issue with. They're like, oh, it's so savage-like behavior. We can't see their bodies. And say, who says our bodies are for display? Who says our bodies are for display? Like, in one sense, even in the Christian faith, which I grew up in the Lutheran church, we're always taught the body is the temple of God. And you reserve that your body for God's pleasure. Even the nuns themselves, mentally, they give themselves to the service of Jesus. They reserve their body. So by behaving these ways, really, we're not trying to be old school, as they normally say. But it's for the sake of retaining a culture and protecting ourselves and those who are trying to make steady advancement. Because this form of a woman is a powerful, Prabhupada in one sense, he says it is the most intoxicating form of Maya. It is the most intoxicating form of Maya. That even, I think it was Bilva Mangala Thakur, even just by the slight movement of the eyebrows, it intoxicates. This is the powerful form of Krishna's Maya. And it is our responsibility to understand that, not just for ourselves, but for also others, and just share what actually this means. Yeah, we might read that the relationship between man and woman is fire, is butter, woman is the gateway to hell, and vice versa for the man, etc. We might read these things and get put off, but we have to understand the context of what happens, what that potency does. Hence the female body is sometimes called Shakti. It's powerful. So as practitioners, we should have knowledge of this and behave accordingly, because our goal in life is not just to be covered up top to bottom. Our goal of life is to make spiritual advancement, is to reconnect with Krishna and reestablish our dormant love for Krishna. So in text 42, I'll just read this section, which really summarizes nicely the message Prabhupada is trying to give out. Prabhupada says, in these instructions of Lord Kapiladev, it is explained that not only is woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for woman. It is a question of attachment. A man becomes attached to a woman because of her service, her beauty, and many other assets. And similarly, a woman becomes attached to a man for his giving her a nice place to live, ornaments, dress, and children. It is a question of attachment for one another. As long as either is attached to the other for such material enjoyment, the woman is dangerous for the man, and the man is also dangerous for the woman. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious, and then marriage is very nice. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore recommends anasaktasya vishayam yataham upayun jataha nirbanda Krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchate. Man and woman should live together as householders in relationship with Krishna only for the process of discharging duties in the service of Krishna. So when the vaya medium is Krishna, there is no question of degradation at any time. So that should be the focus, that we put Krishna, or Krishna is part of the relationship. Then we can properly understand all these points as they should be, in the right perspective, and make spiritual advancement. So we shouldn't walk out of here, the woman shouldn't walk out of here feeling, oh, I'm the gateway to hell. This is not fair. But let's put it in perspective, let's form a bigger point of view, what that means. The Maya Shakti potency is very strong in this form. So we have to take care of that, protect ourselves and protect others so that they can also make spiritual advancement. And a nice example, because I was reading some stories to see how this understanding was in the pastime of when Lakshman was asked, when Lakshman wanted to go and rescue Sita, and Lakshman was asked for a description of Mother Sita. He didn't know, he said, I only ever looked at her feet, so I don't know what she looks like. And I thought this was, wow, what a society. What a society, how respectful it was. Not that you just gazingly look at your brother's wife, but out of respect, you just always bow your head. So I thought that was a really, really wonderful example. So I'll stop there. I'll just read the verse again and see if there are any comments or questions. The woman created by the Lord in his representation of Maya, and one who associates with such Maya by accepting service, must certainly know that this is the way of death, just like a blind well covered with grass. Any comments or question? Yes, probably.
You mentioned that in the relationship, one should keep Krishna in the center. What are the ways?
What are they?
What are the ways by which we can keep Krishna in the center when you're in the relationship?
Okay, so the question is, I mentioned that we should keep Krishna in the center in the relationship. So what are the ways to keep Krishna as the center? This goes for every relationship, not just between husband and wife, but even amongst devotee friends. The way you keep Krishna in the relationship is engage in the 9 processes of bhakti together. So whether it's chanting together, reading together, doing service together. That's everything that you're doing is for Krishna's pleasure. It's not primarily for you or that person. It is for Krishna's pleasure. And you find that when you do that, the relationship becomes stronger. And of course, as it's been recommended, the 6 loving exchanges between devotees, these should also be performed because this churns the rasa between devotees and Krishna. So not only are we're not going to buy each other gifts that are not Krishna conscious, if you know what I mean. Whatever it is that we get, we're trying to use in Krishna service. We do services to inspire ourselves and our family. So if you have a family, you engage all the family members in Krishna service at home. Whether it's cooking, offering prasadam, having deities at home, having an altar, coming to the temple, doing services, encouraging or taking part in the preaching, like there are so many Rath Yatras that are coming up, going to retreats together as a family, coming to the temple on the weekend to do service, seva prasadam. These are the ways that you keep Krishna at the center. And it doesn't mean you become impersonal. There's conversation going on, fine, we can talk about, okay, how was work, da da da, that goes on. But we also want to hear some Krishna katha. We want to hear about Krishna. I was talking to a friend the other day and I was saying, you know, materially speaking, we have nothing in common. Absolutely nothing. The only thing we have in common is Krishna consciousness. And that's why we're good friends, because of Krishna consciousness. And our entire existence, our entire life is based on Krishna consciousness, and the relationship, the friendship is strong because of that. So conversations about how to serve Krishna better, planning for Krishna's pleasure, everything, shopping for Krishna, picking up devotees, serving devotees, that is, these are all different ways that we keep Krishna as the center. We're not so self-absorbed, just me, I want this, I want to do this for me. But we see there's a bigger family here, Krishna's family, and we try to always have Krishna and Krishna's family in the center. So there's so many things. Read together, chant together, honor prasadam together. So much you can do.
Talking about the old verse today, you can come such a, for the material people, you can come such a regressive thinker that, you know, how do you deal with that when people start taking you, they might not take you very seriously because you're such a regressive thinker at workplace or somewhere else.
So how regressive in what way? Regressive as in we are regressive?
Yes, okay. We can come across as very regressive.
Oh, really? Okay.
So how do you deal with that they don't take you?
How do you deal with it? Well, what I try to do, because I was involved with Urban Yoga for so many years and a few preaching progress, I mean projects, so I always educate myself and know what's going on around me. Just for the sake of when I meet people, I understand where they're coming from, what they're going to give me. So, for example, when the US elections were going on, everyone was talking about this Trump or whatever, and they would ask me, so what do you think as, you know, like a spiritual Hare Krishna person? I can't stand there and say, I don't have a TV at home and, you know, I just don't bother. Okay, that's one way of doing it. And people might think we're reclusive, we're regressive, we don't know what's going on in the world. But another way is I just keep myself informed in a limited way as possible. I find out what's going on in the world around me so that I can try to make sense of it and see what Shastra can say about the situation. Can easily explain, you know, that's there in the Bhagavatam. It's explained that leaders in this age that we're living in, they're going to be so full of faults, in it for themselves and just in it for the wealth, and we see that. So we're using Shastra and we educate ourselves about the world that we live in so that we're not totally in the dark, because people then won't come to us for advice, because then they'll think, we don't know what's going on in the world, why go to these guys? So we have to know at least what's going on. Not that we get really zoned in on it all day, every day. We're just on the internet finding out everything. Yeah, this is happening. Oh, did you see what happened in Syria? Oh my God, this is happening in Syria. Oh my God, so this is happening in Turkey and then in Nigeria. Because we don't want to get too overwhelmed by it. But my understanding is that just know enough so that we can enlighten people using the knowledge that we have on these subject matters. So just know a little bit about something. That's what I do. Yes, Bhadi?
Thank you for such a sweet class. It was so enlightening. Thank you very much. I just wanted to add a little bit to that.
Sure.
I think the single most important thing for a devotee is just to be happy. You know, you're a good example and you're balanced in your life. You've got a secure presence about yourself. And just that in of itself proves, well, whatever this person is doing, there must be something to it, you see. And naturally, you will always try to be infiltrated by other elements, trying to pull you out of that equilibrium. Because, you know, some jealousy or whatever, mode of passion is there. So if you are genuinely, you know, be the change that you want to see in the world. You know, be the positive example, and then thereby you can prove, you judge a thing by the result, well, your kind of lifestyle, what's the result?
Mm.
How is it impacting the planet? You know, the fact is, like Bhagavatam is predicted, that the biggest disease all over the world is depression, right? Mental
illness, yeah.
And that's a fact. Just you don't have to look very far, and you don't have to look very deep. It's very obvious, it's very clear. So in your own presence, you're in harmony, and you have that faith and that practice within yourself. Just being, just your presence, will convince anyone.
Yeah, thank you. Being happy in Krishna consciousness is a really powerful preaching tool. Like, people just want to, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't party, you don't do drugs. What are you doing? Like, what do you do? Like, I get this question all the time, like, how do you deal with life without intoxication? Because people out there cannot, as sad as it sounds, it's difficult to go through life in this world without being intoxicated on something. Whether you're popping a Xanax or popping some marijuana or something. People are addicted to prescription medication to try to numb feelings, emotions, to try to numb a lot of things that they cannot make sense of. Whereas at least we might be going through the motions of it, the modes and Adi Atmika, Adi Bhautika, our mind is reeling, other living entities' minds are, you know, on us, and then we have these things going on, other living entities. But somehow or the other, we stay afloat, we stay grounded, because we have a higher process that keeps us grounded and keeps the goal in mind. We have the goal in mind. It's very, very difficult to be successful in life or business without having a goal in mind, because you'll keep on having all these sporadic shoots, well, do this, do that, do that. But if you have the goal in mind, whatever comes your way, you're just going to... So, you know, I'm preparing for a... there's some interfaith thing that they're doing a presentation. They want a Hindu presentation on environmental issues and climate change. So it's an opportunity where I can teach people about a holistic life according to what Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, according to an entire lifestyle. So it's going to pretty much cover everything. And these are ways that people will see that it's actually possible to be eco-friendly internally and externally. Well, whatever you put in, you're going to give out. So, yeah, like you say, we have to be that change. People will see and they'll just wonder. But sometimes, you know, we're so blessed. We got somehow or the other, we got the mercy of Srila Prabhupada through these books. Out there, it's like a bat cage. Has anyone ever visited a bat cage? Bats are just flying, it's just like bam, bam, bam. It's like filling a room that's like bats, and they're just like pew, 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 pew. They're not going anywhere, they're just bashing each other up. Sometimes life, it's like that. No one exactly understands what's going on. Something's going on, they don't know what's going on. And there's a height of mindfulness, but the problem they're experiencing is that they're learning to do this meditation, but then a lot of stuff is coming up. You know, it's like when you're churning over the milk ocean, the first few things that came out, the poison, the scorpions, the whatnots, all these things are coming up and they don't know what to do. So now there's a problem. Yes, mindfulness is in, but then what? What are we going to do with these misplaced emotions and anger? We do not understand that by, you know, endlessly meditating on the objects of the senses, and when they don't, if we do not gratify these senses, our lust burns like fire. And the more you try to satisfy these material senses, it just keeps on burning, and it's frustrating. But they don't have the tools to navigate, and that's where our outreach can help. honestly, otherwise there's no hope. It's really difficult for people out there. Very, very difficult. So we can try our bit, be as happy as you can, so the next person who sees you will ask you, so what do you take? What do you do? Tell me. I say to people all the time, how was your weekend? Yeah, it's good. I need some kirtan. Oh, what's that? So you go out to the pub or go to the footy? No. Then you tell them your lifestyle and they're like, oh, wow. It's possible. But we have to share. Be confident in your sharing. Because people always fear when you're not confident, when you're not sure of yourself, they pick up on it, then they won't be convinced. It's like distributing a book. If you're kind of, Krishna, but it also, you know, meditation. If you're not sure of yourself, they will sense it and they won't be convinced. But you can sell sometimes, you can sell a book on its own merit and the person does not understand a thing you are saying, but they are buying it because you're convinced about the book. You just sell it, it is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, speaking to Arjuna on the battlefield, and they just look at you. Oh yeah? Okay, how much? And they just walk off looking like, wow. They don't understand anything, but they bought you. They bought your conviction. So that's what we have to be out there. We have to have that strong conviction as well and personally apply it. Personal application, preaching application, Shastra Chakshus, use all these things and influence others. Make friends and influence others. Okay, I'm going to stop. Thank you very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.